Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor behind the scenes at the Choice Literacy site. I love our community because we advocate for every teacher as an expert professional in the classroom. We believe students should have a choice and voice in what they read and write. Our podcast highlights the weekly newsletter, including a full article on a timely topic. You'll find the best tools and latest ideas, plus get to know our contributors who are just as funny and smart as you. Most importantly, keep your soul aloft as you empower student choice and voice in your corner of the world.
Dogs are not our whole life, but they make our lives whole, said Roger Karras. I found out the truth of this when we opened our hearts to a new puppy earlier this year. The lead essay called Over the Moon shares why I now live with a German Shepherd. Over the Moon. For nearly a year, we had the same conversation a zillion times in our house. Our kids, all busy teenagers, wanted a dog. Andy and I know life is easier without a dog. We were firm with the no dog decision. This did not stop our kids from discussing their hope for a dog. They volunteered at a local animal shelter and each time came home with a report of the perfect dog. If we get a dog, we are getting a puppy, I said. Their friend sent pictures of their new puppies, and the kids showed us. A puppy would be fun, I said. They kept up with local dog breeders and gave us updates. We're not getting a dog, Andy said. One day, Sam pressed hard, and I snapped. Instead of my usual sweet but noncommittal response, I spat, "We're not getting a dog. It's not going to happen. Let it go." I saw him shrink. The news spread to the other kids, and they were just as disheartened. I wanted to defend our choice, reminding them that we had consistently said we were not getting a dog. Instead, I wondered if Andy and I were making the wrong choice. We began to talk about our no dog decision. There was no question, being dogless was easier. Is there more to making a right decision than ease? Why were we so adamantly against a new dog? We are an active family. Without a dog, the house stays cleaner, and we can be more spontaneous. Although this is pragmatic, it is also true that the sting of losing a dog can be enough to want to avoid the hurt in the future. We are dog people. This means our lives are more complete when a dog is part of our family. Our kids' hearts had holes from missing the companionship of a dog. Andy and I were jaded from losing our last dog after spending so much energy and love in setting right habits that can come with older dogs adopted from the shelter. We didn't have the energy to attend to the high needs of adding a dog to the house. Yet, our kids needed a win. The easy choice turned out to be the wrong choice. Recently, we welcomed home our Luna, a 10-week-old German Shepherd puppy. Although we were right that a puppy disrupts our well-established routines, we are discovering that she was the right decision. We are over the moon, and I find myself wondering if there are other decisions I should reevaluate because the easy choice isn't always the right choice.
Our articles and videos feature full-time teachers and literacy leaders who spend every day in classrooms. Classic classroom content is updated continuously with 4 to 6 new features published each week.
This week's theme is Honoring Identity. Christy Rush Levine considers how to communicate to all students that their presence and their identities are valued and appreciated in her article, Honoring Student Identity. She is inspired by Cy Montgomery's book, The Soul of an Octopus. In Belonging in a School Community, Susie Kabak thinks deeply about the concept of belonging as an essential part of building a school community. She writes, "To me, as I consider the school communities where I work, belonging happens when people have ownership of what happens in a space. Belonging means a person knows their voice is heard, they have agency, and they believe that if they are not there in that space, people will sense that something is missing." In this week's video, Catherine Sokolowski helps fifth grader Sydney brainstorm ideas for a story. She uses her own experiences in writing to instruct. In an encore video, Christy Rush Levine confers with eighth grader Bridget, coaxing her to compare and contrast the reading experience and plot twists in the books.
Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those spontaneous, teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same.
The start of the school year is often all about building reader identities in classrooms. And then November comes, and many of the activities that help students celebrate their reading histories and preferences are forgotten. Tara Barnett and Kate Mills share ways teachers can continue to help students define, refine, and expand their reading identities all year long in their article, Building Reading Identities Across the Year. Tammy Mulligan returns to teaching first grade and immediately creates agency and independence during writing workshop. Tammy explains how her students are setting their own goals as writers. Tammy is an active contributor to Choice Literacy, and she also maintains a collaborative blog, Teachers, Books, Readers. This post is brilliant, as is expected, but you should be warned that if you hop over to TBR, you'll be there a while because all of the posts are brilliant. Helping students find and raise their voices so that they can someday change the world is one of the most important things we do. Kathy Meir shares some of her favorite mentor texts for this essential work in an article called Raising Student Voices. This week, I chatted with Kathy about the inspiration behind the article. It was a joy to hear her talk more in depth about raising student voices, and I enjoyed thinking more deeply about how we can lift student stories in ways that honor their identities. I hope you enjoy listening in on our conversation. Kathy Meir wrote the article, Raising Student Voices, which is a book list of different texts to share with students to help them have an idea of the kinds of stories they can tell. Kathy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
So you opened the article by sharing about a poem that had a lasting impact on you. Will you tell us about it?
Yes. I stumbled upon the poem that I shared in some work with the Columbus Area Writing Project. And when I saw it, I was just so moved by the story of these two young women and the way people saw them and the way their lives were similar in so many ways. And so the meaning of the poem was one thing, but what really struck me was their ability, their power with their words. And I started to wonder, what did they have in place as students beginning in kindergarten to get to that place to tell that poem that day on that stage?
Yeah, it is a really powerful performance of those two 14-year-old girls. I think the link in the article, it's called A Muslim and Jewish Girl's Bold Poetry Slam on YouTube. And it's a great clip for everybody to watch. You also were referencing Sara Ahmad's book, Being the Change. So I'm thinking that you must have been reading that at kind of the same time that that all had happened, that you had saw it from the Columbus Area Writing Project. You're reading the book and thinking about
how do we get kids to tell their stories?
Yeah, you know how worlds collide a little bit. I think it was reading the book, which really had me thinking quite a bit about how to help communities build safe spaces where kids could have these conversations and begin to read and write in the ways that might help prepare them to do some of these same things. That in addition to at the time, as the elementary literacy instructional leader, we were doing some work about writing and empowering student voices. And so I think just all of those things together really brought me pause when I saw this and led the opening to a lot of work we did as teachers and students in classrooms.
It's always great when things just kind of begin lining up and suddenly all of our thinking grows bigger and bigger than what we could have ever imagined.
Yeah, it is interesting how you're thinking about one thing and then you see a book and you're like, oh, that book really goes with that thinking. Or you have a conversation with a colleague and that pushes your thinking some more and all those things come together to get you to a new place. And I really felt like we needed to start to get to a new place where kids had some power and some choice in their writing and really had a place to share their stories and being able to get their voice beyond those classroom walls.
Yeah. And so I was just thinking, you know, about at that moment, all those things that you were thinking and how stuff was coming together for you. But also you have been writing for a long time and writing about literacy and how kids learn to read and write. And I'm just always so struck by how you're so clear about the power of reading and writing and the way that reading shapes our writing and writing shapes us as readers. And so the thing that I was kind of struck by with this book list is how it's about the power of telling stories. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why this book list in particular is important to you.
I always felt one of the most important places to be when my kids walked into the classroom was at the classroom door, because it never, ever fails. All the good storytelling happens right there. And so if I would be at that door and be listening, I would find the opportunity to open doors for the kids in their own writing. I felt like we were in a place where kids were kind of telling the story they thought they should tell instead of the story of who they really were. And so what I wanted to do was to provide an opportunity for teachers to read writing where kids shared their story, where adults shared their stories, where they also felt comfortable writing in that way, so that those opportunities would be in place for kids in the classroom. So it wasn't just that you were writing about what the teacher told you and the way the teacher told you to write it, but instead you have this great story. How do you think you want to tell it? And who do you want to hear this story? And so these books really became a good vehicle for that conversation, because they open the door to deeper conversations, to kids being able to share more about who they are. And it's in those conversations that we begin to see the seeds and the possibility for the stories they have to tell in their writing. And so the book list itself was really just the layers of that thinking, how I might start to introduce it with kids. Books that I thought would show them interesting ways to craft their writing, but also open up a conversation in the learning community. I guess, too, I was thinking across grade levels. At the time, I was working with groups of teachers from kindergarten through fifth grade. I wanted to think about books that might be a possibility no matter where you were in your teaching.
So I'm curious about what considerations do you give to sharing a book with certain ages?
I guess when I think about the youngest learners, I do want to be careful that I introduce stories that they're ready to handle. And so it seems like so often books that tell a story are a great way for them to start to share what they know about an experience, and they seem to connect to those experiences. As I think across grade levels, the ability of kids to comprehend and to understand the message of an author and to dig a little deeper and to be able to talk about more challenging or more timely, maybe, information is a big part of that. So I want books that really speak to the kids where they are developmentally, but also where we are in the world at the time. And I also have to weigh truthfully, I'm a white teacher in a classroom. And so I really want the books I choose to open up the possibility for kids to see things from different perspectives, but also to be books that show kids from a lot of different stories. Our identity is really about a lot of different ways we are in the world. And so I really want books and authors, and we're so fortunate right now, right, Ruth, that authors are doing such a great job writing these kind of stories for us. We have own voice authors who are sharing their stories and making it so much better for us to share these kind of books in our classrooms and help kids see new possibilities in the stories they can tell and the way they can write.
Yeah, it's so true. I think it's one of those things about when you write an article like this one, the Raising Student Voices book list, it's just always changing. And we do live in a time where we can share such a variety of stories with kids. I was just thinking about what you were saying earlier about how you were helping kids learn to tell the stories about who they really are, and not just the stories that they think the teacher wants to hear. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about how the books you're sharing create classrooms that are safe for students to tell their stories.
I feel like there are layers in that work. So I think the first piece for me is always getting books in kids' hands that help them to tell their own story and know who they are, right? So when you think about books that are in that list, like Come With Me, where you hear this perspective of a child, it's easy for the kids to jump in and tell their perspective and how they see themselves and what they do in the world. And I think starting there with books that help kids define themselves, in the book list there, I talk about Rhythm and Resistance, which is really one of the books probably that works best as students get older, though there are places in there for our younger learners too. And what I think happens in Rhythm and Resistance, if you haven't seen that book, it is really quite interesting. It's written, it's a collection that's put together by Linda Christensen and Diane Watson. And what's interesting is teachers tell about introducing difficult topics to their students and how they do that, and they use poetry. And books can kind of do that same thing. So once we define ourselves, then I think it's learning about other perspectives that helps us to not only see ourselves a little bit differently, but see how we are in the world and how that impacts people around us. And some of that takes, I feel like we're in a time, Ruth, where we all have our opinions, but I don't know that we always listen and learn from what other people think. And that's where I really love books like the poetry book that you have listed there that I added of Irene Latham, where it's Can I Touch Your Hair? Where every poem is told in two perspectives. You've got Irene Latham telling her part, and then at the same time, you have Charles Waters talking about his experience. So something as simple as buying shoes means something's for one person, something different for someone else. And so pushing kids to think about how a story might be told by other people or how other people might see a situation sort of helps to build those layers. But finally, in that conversation, you get to this place where it's talking about advocacy and action, right? It's one thing to know that what you saw a friend do in the cafeteria to another friend wasn't a nice thing. It's a whole nother one to stand up and say so. There are a lot of books coming out right now that help kids learn to raise that voice. Funny, you were saying how an article like this, the books always change. Hopefully the ideas stay the same or they get better, but the books that can go in there and help our writers continues to grow. There's a new book out called Intersection Allies. I don't know if you've seen it, but it talks about people from their different perspectives and then how we can sort of be an ally to people in need. And so I think by continuing to build those collections of books and reading them with our kids, we can help them to think about new ways they can be in the world, that they can handle difficulties, and that they can share their stories in writing. So once they see all these different things that authors share, it can make them feel a little more safe in sharing some of their stories as well.
I love the way that you just talked about it, because it is so true that as we hear other people tell their stories, then it gives us the courage to tell our own stories. I haven't seen that new book yet, but Kathy, I'm not surprised, because every time I talk to you, I have a new book that I go and buy. So I think this one will be the new one. What did you say that title was again?
It's called Intersection Allies.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that. One more thing I wanted you to maybe talk a little bit about is, in this book list, you refer to different texts and you're including videos. Will you tell us about that decision?
Actually, Ruth, that's just something I'm trying to get better at myself. There are so many different ways that people tell stories now, and not just in books and not just in writing, but in blogs and in video. And so I've really tried to get better about finding videos that either help us to understand what it is that we're talking about or show another possibility for creation. So a lot of the videos that I have there, I believe, are also stories of kids who are making a big difference in the world. They are already finding ways to advocate. When I see a lot of those videos, I just wonder what I'm doing with my life, to be quite honest, when these 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds are finding ways to make such great change. So I do try to bring videos to show different possibilities, but also to stay relevant to what's happening for kids, maybe grow that conversation a little more with students. And I'm trying to get better at that one all the time. Videos, there's so much out there, right?
Yeah, there is. And just the way that storytelling is evolving and including images and videos and music and sound effects. And I find it fascinating the way that we're growing as storytellers. And I admire the way that you're bringing that into the classroom.
I think that in those cases there, and in those that were shared, those are kids doing some really interesting things. And I think it helps kids to see, wow, look what's possible. I can make a difference now. I do think with the internet and all the pros and cons of it, it gives kids an opportunity to get their voice out there in ways that was never possible. You know, I just think about the days when writing went in a folder and nobody but the teacher saw it, and we're just in a different time. And so teaching kids how to access that, but also how to be responsible in that, is an important part of our work, I feel like.
Definitely. It is an important part of the work of teachers in reading and in writing. Kathy, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us and this cracking open kind of behind the scenes of the Raising Student Voices article. I just love how it's work that continues, and we're always growing and thinking of new ways to raise student voices. But like you said, the ideas and the intent behind it really grow strong roots and just grow deeper as time moves on.
Yeah, it's really work that rests on the shoulders of a lot of teachers, authors, advocates. And I hope we can continue to step forward in that conversation and help kids find their way.
Well, Kathy, thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to reading your article.
Thanks, Ruth.
Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to literacy coaches and school leaders. Our contributors share their best advice for working one-on-one with teachers in coaching cycles, hosting professional development sessions, and designing demonstration lessons and study groups. Our Literacy Leader members will find 2 to 4 new features each week.
This week, when David Pittman says no to a task outside his coaching role, he shows a commitment to his priorities. David describes the tension and nuances of saying no and the effect it can have on coaching relationships in his article, Saying No. In Maintenance as Leadership, Matt Renwick opens the article with a story of the way he adds a calendar reminder to check the playground for wasp nests each year. It's one of the ways he ensures kids are safe. I love the connection Matt makes to ensuring the systems of a school are operating as they should by maintaining relationships, literacy and learning, and presence. Stephanie Affinito explores the power of old school notes and cards in coaching. There's a link to Stephanie's website so anyone can check this out. Each newsletter begins and closes with a quote. This week, the newsletter closes with an Oscar Wilde quote. Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. Behind the scenes each week is our copy editor, Laurel Robinson. This week, she included a sweet note about the Oscar Wilde quote because it is one of her favorites. Me too, I responded. I hope you'll claim this quote as one of your favorites too, because I think the world would be spectacular if more of us were committed to being ourselves.
Choice Literacy is a proudly independent community. We are not associated with any commercial publisher. We don't recommend packaged or scripted programs. Our contributors write for educators just like themselves, who are figuring things out by listening to students and reflecting on each day. Thanks for joining me for the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor of the Choice Literacy site.
The theme of the next Big Fresh is assessing writers.
You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh newsletter so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep offering choice and voice to students in what they read and write. And don't forget to keep your soul aloft. Shine on, everyone.